Accession number 18535, Reel 2.
Right, the camp. Can you tell me a bit about it?
Yes, a very large camp. I think the average was about 20,000 men in it. Largely veterans from Dunkirk, you know, the early part soldiers, yeah, the army. A few seamen, not very many, quite a few Lascars, or these Indian chaps who served on British merchant ships. Approximately 800 to 1,000 RAF there. And the RAF were in a compound apart from the others. The others were in various compounds, but they were allowed to, the gates used to be open each day, and they could walk out and mix with each other. Later on, after I'd been a prisoner for about a year or 18 months, they allowed us to walk out and mix with the army chaps. But our camp, or our compound, was in the middle of the camp, so that we weren't near any outside barriers for sort of tunnelling purposes. So there were tunnels started, one or two chaps started tunnels, which nearly always were discovered, but not all of them. But, it didn't appear to me that the army were making many attempts to escape, but the RAF was all, I must say as well, I was proud of being a RAF, there's always a buzzing, there was always a thought that someone was going to escape. Now, I hadn't been prisoner long before we were given to a proper sort of barrack, cold, horrible place, stone floor, windows had long gone, there were sort of shutters, but they didn't keep out the cold. But you were divided up into tables of 10 per table. And my table was there was only myself and another Englishman on the table, the others were Kiwis and Canadians. And I hadn't been prisoner long, a matter of 3 or 4 months, when quite suddenly, one of the chaps, one of the Canadians, Hubert Brooks, disappeared. But in his place was another chap who was a New Zealander, which was soon found out what had happened. They'd swapped over, and that gave Hubert Brooks a chance to go out in a working party. And the New Zealander, whose name we begin to use regular, Fred Cole, was with us right throughout the whole time we were prisoners. And we never heard any more about Hubert Brooks. But when I came home later, I had a magazine sent to me from Canada telling me the remarkable story of this Hubert Brooks. He'd escaped, gone further into Poland, joined up with the Polish underground, and done remarkable things. Got promoted in the Polish army and one thing and a remarkable story. There was another chap on the table called Ken Hyde, a Canadian, Tex Hyde. It was a fusspot. On the tiny little fires we used to make out of bits of tin, little bits of wood, he'd always be poking around with a stick and water. We didn't know what he was doing, trying to cook some silly thing. Only subsequently, after the war, did I find out that he was a camp photographer. And he was responsible for my photographs being taken that I had put on my later escape papers. There was him, there was Moran Davis, who, when I had made my escape and got caught up in Stralsund and was taken into a prison, I suddenly met those two in there. You know, they'd escaped about the same time as me, but got caught as soon as they arrived in Stralsund. But the camp itself was, I suppose, what you'd expect to be a prison word, pretty grim, but it was no ill treatment. And, oh dear, well, excuse me.
Anyhow, there was no ill treatment.
There was no ill treatment, except for April 1943. It must have been April 43. The Canadians landed in Dieppe. There was a mock landing. I don't know if you remember that land. Mock.
That was summer 42, wasn't it?
That was summer. 42. Oh. Shortly after I've been in prison. Why, yes, of course. Summer 42. That's right. And so the Germans took reprisals against us because some of the Canadians, on going back to their ships, or going back to their landing craft, had taken a few German prisoners to take back to England. And as the German prisoners were being marched past some of the places, the encampments or the dugouts where the Germans were, they shouted out something. And the Canadians, without any ado, shot the prisoners they'd taken, which was against the Geneva Convention, or so the Germans said. So anyway, so they took reprisals against the RAF and the Canadians. The Canadians were largely the Windsor Scottish, the almost complete regiment was captured. And their reprisals meant that there was no Red Cross food, which was very scarce in that camp. In lots of camps they had a Red Cross parcel every day, every week, because that's what was sent off from England. But we used to get one between two now and again. Sometimes you go months without a Red Cross parcel. But they suspended no Red Cross food, no heat in the barracks, no heat in the barracks. German guards marching up and down in the barracks, and our hands at first were tied with sisal, or cheap sisal, every day tied with sisal, which made such things as going to the toilet rather difficult. The toilets, incidentally, the most horrible places I've ever seen. 40 holes, they used to call them. Ghastly. Later on...
What was the food like? Your camp food?
Very basic. Very basic. We got an eighth of a loaf each day, and it was our German rye bread, which was always greeny mould on the outside. Always. I don't know why, but anyway, always was. Eighth of a loaf, which will give you a slice about that thick. And three potatoes and a soup. Sometimes the potatoes come up like mash because they used to steam them in a sort of room anyway. And a soup, which was generally terrible to me. Terrible soups. They're rather Swede soup, just chopped up Swedes, dropped in water, no salt. Cabbage soup. Sometimes a peculiar powdery soup, which they called WSK powder. I don't know what it meant, but that was had more taste to it. Well, that was the main soups. They come up in great big dustbin things. I could not eat the sweet soup, and I couldn't eat the cabbage soup. My stomach's always been against those. So much so that I used to offer my ration to the other chaps. You know, I used to say, anybody want mine? I don't want it. But things had to be done properly, so they had to have a roster. Who was going to have main soup? So much that they made me the ration king for the barrack, because I dish out the soup, you see. And then when it gets to the end, does anybody want mine?
What did you live on then?
What did I live on? I lived on the potatoes, the bread. I always managed the bread. Sometimes if there was any cigarettes about, and I used to use them to buy perhaps an extra piece of bread. Occasionally brought other things up, a funny little cheese, occasional round cheeses. But of course, I mostly wanted was the Red Cross food, which, with black market in the camp, you could get Red Cross, you know, from the army in particular. If you wanted a tiny tin of cheese, you know, that was about 10 cigarettes, you see. So there were plenty of Canadian cigarettes about, sweet capitals. Canadians seem to have parcels of 1,000 cigarettes when they come from home, but we only got parcels of 100 cigarettes, and then very rare, very rare. So the sweet capital became sort of the currency of the camp. But,
did you keep fit? I mean, you didn't really have a balanced diet, did you?
Oh, no, I was fit. I did go down with hepatitis, with yellow jaundice. Oh, that's probably because there was no fresh food. I didn't have any fresh food at all. So I went down with hepatitis and was taken into the camp lazarette. And then what else did I get? I got some other sort of... Oh no, later on when I was on that hunger march, I went down with dysentery very bad. But actually I kept fit. I played games there. I was always getting up to some sort of mischief.
I was going to say, how did you occupy your time? Because there must have been... Did you go out and work or anything?
No. The RAF couldn't go... They wouldn't allow the RAF to go out to work. They wouldn't allow us to go out to work.
Why not?
Too risky. In the early days, chaps who were prisoner of war before me told me the Germans used to take them out once a month on a Sunday for a walk through the woods. But that became far too risky. There were always blokes dodging off. So that was stopped. So... But we used to enjoy ourselves. I used to play a bit of soccer, basketball in particular, and volleyball we used to play, and walking. I used to walk all day long sometimes. You know, I found on a very low diet, I was very fit, very fit. Or I thought I was very fit.
How did you occupy your minds? Could you read?
Yes, there were a limited number of books available. Yeah. Limited number of books. Chaps used to make up games, like Ludo-type games. We used to have games. We used to have quizzes. The news was always very important to us, so we had a sort of crystal radio, which used to be set up at night, and then chaps used to listen in, and then they used to write up the German version of the news and the English version of the news and try in between to get a sort of a true idea, a true picture of it. But yes, there were always something to do, always things to get
up
to.
Did you get on each other's nerves at all?
Occasionally, yes, yeah. Yes, we did. Yes, we did. On one occasion, a long time after the war, I met a chap in a London hotel who said to me, you were in 8B, weren't you? I said, yes. He said, yes. He said, I do remember, he said on occasion, he said, I was in one barrack looking out through the window on one gloomy afternoon. He said, and a well-known New Zealander stood up and he was shouting, and suddenly a fist came out and hit him on the jaw and he went down flat. He said, and that was you, wasn't it? Yes, it was. Yes, this chap got on my nerves so much, I lost my temper and whacked him across the table. He degratiated himself with the army theatrical group, who were allowed much more privileges than we were. And somehow or another, he was at 9 o'clock of an evening, when we were all locked in, he'd still be out, and then the Germans would escort him back into our barracks, and we couldn't make out. And we couldn't make out why he wasn't doing more, bringing in bits of clothing to make up and to escape clothing. But he wasn't interested in that way. He was only interested in the theatre. And I had a little bit of an argument one day, and as I say, he called me something, a pommy bastard, was an expression I detested, and sort of, I had to give him a whack, but yes, we did get on each other's nerves sometimes.
What were your relations with the guards? I mean, did you make friends with any of them? Or?
No, not really. Our guard in charge of the RAF compound was Unteroffizier Kussel, K-U modified SSEL, Kussel. And he would have a smile on his face sometimes, and he'd be looking at us if we were up to some nonsense when he walked through the barrack, and he'd say, and he used to shake his fingers much, say, I know you're up to something. But if you went out of bed sharp in the morning, he would bring his revolver out and whack you across the shoulder with it. So you couldn't lay in bed, you know. Roll call used to be about 6:30, summer and winter, and he could be quite brutal. But other times, fair, but you'd never get friendly with him, that was quite impossible. And he didn't want to get friendly with us because his little office at the end was often broken into. Things were being stolen from his office. But
going back to your remark about RAF crews not being allowed out, presumably because they were the only ones who were trained to escape and live off the land.
Yeah,
is that correct?
Great spirit in the RAF, yeah. A tremendous spirit there was. It was always thinking of what we could do to do the Germans down. All sorts of things he thought of, you know. On this occasion, when they took reprisals against us, we were allowed no heat in the barracks, no hot drinks, nothing like that, just the bare bread and potatoes each day. I think the soup used to come in. The German guards couldn't make out why every now and again they saw chaps walking about with mugs of hot coffee, you know, their German ersatz coffee, or whatever it might be, with hot drinks, or perhaps hot water to shave. They couldn't make out where the hot water was coming from, because the chap was so enterprising. With old tin Dixies, they would make immersion heaters and plug them into the lights above, and boiling hot water, because the beds were 2, 4, 6, 3 columns high, so the top beds were right near the lights, and the Germans never rumbled at it at all. Never rumbled
at
all.
But when you think of it, an RAF crew is quite a concentration of skilled manpower, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is, yeah. I mean, we all had, In the RAF compound, we all had lovely mugs they'd get hold of tin, because the Germans never gave you any knives, forks, spoons or anything to drink out of. But they would get old tins, they'd bake bean tins or something like that. They would polish them with the sand, you know, so they shone like a proper tankard. And then a handle would be put on them, tin bent in to make the shape of the handle. And then out of some of the barbed wire, that was the first string of barbed wire around our compound, they used, where it was knotted, there was a softer metal used. And they used to take this metal off and make rivets to make the handles of these cups. And then if you had some cigarettes, two cigarettes to the right man, he would engrave your initials on those. And they would look beautiful. Every morning, polish them with the sand, yeah. Oh, we used to clean our tables till they were absolutely dead white. Take them outside with the sand that was, it was a sandy soil. Scrub them with the sand. Beautiful tables we had, beautiful, but not supplied by the Germans.
Now, you learned a bit of speak a bit of German, did you?
Oh, yes. Unfortunately, I'd done a bit of German at school, and modest, about midway in the class, I suppose, with German. But when I went from Dulag Luft to 8B with about 15 or 16 other airmen, there was nobody who could speak German, and there was nobody, no German, who could speak English in charge. And so I happened to interpret one or two little remarks or orders they'd given us. So they made me the interpreter for the bunch. And of course, my German improved rapidly with the basic school learning. And after a while I was there, I got quite good at German. That's when I went in front of the escape committee, they thought my German was quite good enough to escape. And I found it very good. When I was on the loose, I had to use it several times.
Tell me about that, your escape. I mean, how did you prepare for it? How long did it take? What did you have to do?
Yeah, well, first of all, when I decided to escape, I let the right person know, and I was asked, actually, and I had thought about escaping. I said, yes, I had. Because Bader had come to the camp and was chasing folks up, you know, saying, look, what are you doing? Yes.
So it was officers and other ranks?
No, he was visiting. The Germans allowed him to visit our camp. ours wasn't an off-flag, it was all other ranks. Yeah. But he was allowed to come to the camp. For some reason, I miss seeing him. But he came to the camp, I just remember seeing him, that's all, and he made a remark to the table. But he was saying to chaps, what are you doing about escaping? And they said, no, I'm not. Well, it's not right. And he was that type of man.
They let him go around the camps talking to
the Germans,
people.
Germans, escorted, of course, from Germans. Well, then I was told that my time of getting near for escaping, I was getting on the list and one thing and another.
And you had to join a waiting list, did you?
Oh, yes, yeah. And I was told the best thing to do was to get onto a working party. Now, the army were allowed to go out to work. And they used to go to all sorts of places, coal mines, farms. A farm was ideal. But I had to find someone else who would willingly swap over with me. And I found a New Zealander who was in not very good health. He'd been captured at Crete. And on the right day and the right occasion, I'd already been supplied with my papers. I'd had my photograph taken at the back of the barracks somewhere and one thing like that, collar and tie, fairly respectable. I got my set of papers, which had been magnificent. I had my escape money given to me.
It was a German identity card, was it?
Yes, yeah.
So you had an alias?
Yes, I was a German. I was a Belgian electrician. And for the life of me, I forgot my name. But I was a Belgian electrician being allowed to travel to Stralsund to work in the dockyard. And a beautiful set of papers they were. They were very good. And they passed muster.
Now, how did they presumably knew what the genuine article looked like. So they
and they must have done. Because
I wonder how they got hold of them.
That I don't know. The script was beautiful German script.
Gothic script, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And the Gestapo stamp on top of the photograph was absolutely perfect.
You don't know how this was all made?
No, I don't. Sadly enough, I don't. It was kept very quiet. The chaps who were doing that work, I didn't know them. I knew two men who I knew were vaguely involved. One was this Tex Hyde, or Ken Hyde, and the other one was a chap called Lawrence, a chap who'd been shot down in Bomber Command, with grim-looking chap, and he'd lost the use of one leg almost. But I knew he was something to do with the escape committee. But they were very, in that camp, they were very thorough indeed. And, I got the papers. I got New Zealand ready to escape with me, and on the right day, I was taken down to a part of the barbed wire, and on the other side of the compound, they bought this Len Murray, this New Zealander, from his compound, and we climbed over the wire. I gave him my clothes, and he gave him his army clothes. Well, he was taller than me.
Oh, and so you could get on a working party.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the party was leaving the next day, you see. It was all done for timing. And so I went into this very sparse barrack, hardly any chaps there, about 30 or 40 fellas in there. I went into this barrack, and straight away I was confronted by a little short New Zealand sergeant who's come up to me, and he said, where'd you come from, Kiwi? Now, I, being a sort of Cockney, thought I had a splendid Kiwi accent. And I said, Tikawiti. Oh, yes, he said, where's that? Oh, well, I said, just across the bay. He said, oh, yeah. Anywhere near Whanganui? Yes, I said, quite close to Whanganui. What are you? RAF. So my cover was blown straight away, but he was all right. He didn't let on. Well, the next day we went out of the camp.
So you're in army uniform now?
I'm in army uniform.
Yeah.
It was Private Len Murray.
Yeah.
Coming out of the camp next day, and we went on board a train, and we went to a place called Bismarckhütte, where there was a great big factory complex, and they were making armoured trains. Nearby, we had a little camp, just like the main camp, but very small, only housed 200 men. And each morning we used to take out to this factory site where they were making armoured trains, great sheets of red-hot metal flying around. There were Russians with their wives and children living on the floor, on the stone floor. They worked and lived and slept there all day. No other place to go. There were some Ukrainian girls who were busy on this hot metal, pulling with great big pliers, sheets of metal. Most peculiar place. First job we did was to dig a very, very deep hole into where they were going to house a pile driver. And the hole, the method of digging it was very crude. As you went further down the hole, loose sandy soil, they put a platform inside, great poles were stuck in, the platform inside, so the men at the bottom with long-handled spades would throw their earth onto the platform, and those on that platform would throw it up. But in no way was I wanting to help the Germans in any way, so I never learnt to throw the earth up properly. I'd throw it up and it'd go over my shoulder, come down. Very easy. A slice, flicker your wrist. And go. So they got a little bit tired of me there, so they took me off that job and they put me with a civilian, like, engineer who was building a tower of like, I don't know how to explain it, but I can't think of the word.
Well, scaffolding.
Like a scaffolding, but metal scaffolding. Yeah. It would be bolted. Only pieces about that long were bolted across around. And he was very nice to me. He was a Pole, actually, but friendly to the Germans. And very, very pleasant man. But didn't realise that as he was tightening up the bolts, of course, I used to thoroughly enjoy myself, but untighten them. And where possible, now and again, take the bolts and nuts out and fling them in the field. Well, when I told one or two of the others about that, they said, we'll do a bit of that. One morning we arrived there and the whole thing, which had got up to about 15 foot high, had all collapsed. Gone. But while I was on that camp, I managed to get that work party. There were all sorts working there. I managed to contact some Frenchmen. And I found a Frenchman who, I got a pair of boots for him and he gave me a jacket. Something else, I gave him some sweets or chocolate or something like that, and I got a nice little Tyrolean hat, a sort of feather up the side.
How did you get things to trade? Boots and things.
I suppose I had, yeah. I can't remember how I got the boots, spare boots. Oh, yes, I know. When I first made a prisoner of war, I had a pair of escape boots, rough escape boots, which were like ordinary shoes, and the leather that went around, zipped down, you just had to break one thread, and you could take the whole top of it off, and you had like an ordinary pair of civilian shoes, with pattern on, you know. Yes. But the Germans spotted that, and they took them away from me. I never thought they'd recognise them, but they took them away from me and gave me clogs. So I had clogs. But when I got out, because I got used to clogs, you could run and anything in them. They were lovely and warm.
Really?
Very warm clogs. I'd always recommend them for warmth and cold weather. Anyway, when I was going out in the work party, they gave me two pair of boots. Because I said, I never had any boots. I only had clogs, and they gave me two pair of boots. One newish pair and one pair for working in. They had like wooden soles or wooden bars across, most peculiar thing. So I had two pair of boots. So I flogged one to this Frenchman. So I got a briefcase. I had to get a briefcase. Got a briefcase to take a bit of chocolate in and the papers.
Where did you get that from?
Red Cross. You saved up your Red Cross food, you know.
And oh, when you traded it?
Yes, yes. And I can't remember if I'd saved mine if I'd escape committee issue me with chocolate. But chocolate and raisins I had to take with me. Yes, the black briefcase I got from one of the Frenchmen.
Oh, yeah.
For some cigarettes or something like that. It wasn't very much. So on the day in question that I was going to escape, I went to, on the morning, oh, I must tell you the story, the day before I was due to escape, there were rumours in the camp, had been for a little while, this small camp, that there was someone spilling information to the Germans. And they thought it might be the South Africans, because there were New Zealanders and South Africans mainly in this camp, and they thought it might be the South Africans, but whether it was, there was no proof of that whatsoever. But the day before I was due to escape, I had a sort of dummy run that day, and I'd taken my escape money with me and my papers. And as we come back into the camp, there's a fairly big area, parade area, and there, to my horror, was German civilian police, uniformed police, the army, high-ranking officers, the Gestapo, you can recognise them a mile off, crowds of them, and we all made to stand 6 foot apart from each other while each man was searched. And I was in about the third row back, and I couldn't believe it. The stuff they were putting onto the playground was unbelievable. One of the items was a great big spirit level. I mean, our chaps would pinch anything, you know. And the pile, there were loaves of bread, cake, German-like biscuit-type stuff, how blokes had managed to get off. It was piling up. And I was very sick because
you had your escape documents on you.
I had them on me and the money. So while nobody was looking, I managed to take it out of my pocket there and drop it down the back of my battle dress and just tighten the buckle of there. So it was down in the back of my battle dress. Well, as they come near and towards me, a German soldier came up, and just as he was going to start searching me, he was pushed aside by the most immaculate German officer in a beautiful, what regiment it was, I don't know, but a dark green, exquisitely fitting uniform, beautiful, tiny little man, very small, and very daintily he came towards me and said, "Excuse me," and he undid my top button, put his hand in, and to my horror, he pulled out a piece of paper. When he looked at it, it was the words of Lily Marlene in German. And he looked at it and he said, "What is this? Why have you got this?" I said, "Oh, it's Lily Marlene." And he said, "Do you like that song?" I said, "Oh, I thought it's a lovely song, a beautiful song. I want to learn the German words." He said, "Oh, dear, how are you getting on?" I said, "Oh, yes, oh, very nice." He carefully folded, put it back, buttoned it down, turned me around, tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Off you go." Just like that. God, I walked off that program with his money in the back of the...
Why did he go for you?
I don't know. He just decided that he would pick me. When I got back into the barrack, that had been searched, and the room was absolutely turmoil. Everything was thrown over. And the sort of sacky mattress we slept on, mine had been turned over, and underneath was my navy blue trousers. I'd had, like, army trousers, I dyed them, navy blue, to escape. And there they were, exposed, and the briefcase, completely exposed. The German soldiers, pretty dim lot, really, they hadn't noticed that. I don't know what they were looking for, radios or something like that. So I went next morning,
You went, how did you get?
Marched to the factory in the morning with the civilian clothes underneath an army uniform. Made me look a bit bulky, but they didn't notice it. And made an excuse that I was going to get water to make tea or something like that with another chap. So we went over with two buckets. When I got to the wall, there was a big pile of earth against the wall. And I took the clothes off, put it in the bucket. The other chap took the clothes back. I was in civvy clothes, jumped over the wall, and I was in the main street of the town.